There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave counsel. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Thursday edition of the show, just a week out from Christmas. And a big congratulations once again. Carolyn Euler won our Naughty or Nice Christmas prize pack, over $6,600 worth of gifts, so she could keep them herself. Or if you're a kin or a friend, you may get lucky and get one of those under the Christmas tree next week. So congratulations to Carolyn. Good stuff. All right, I mentioned as we went into the news, joined by AL5's Congressman Mo Brooks. Always a treat to get the congressman on the show. Thanks for your time. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
And so what have you been talking about lately? we've had these conversations in the past. You have the ear of obviously AL5 in the state of Alabama, but you have a lot of conservatives nationally that are listening to what you say. I mean, I know you must hear it at your office or, you know, through social media.
Well, I hope that's the case.
Oh, come on.
my wife always tells me not to get a big head, so I'm trying not to when you say such kind remarks.
Well, but it's true, and you are a voice right now on this specific issue here, that there are a lot of conservatives, because I'm watching what's happened on social media, that aren't in Alabama, that aren't in AL5. I mean, you know, they're all over the country. And they are falling in and behind somebody who is going to challenge the Electoral Congress vote. Is that what it's called? Explain this to us. Kind of do a remedial for people that hadn't been keeping up with this. What happened? What are you going to do on January 6th?
All right. Well, by way of background, and contrary to what a lot of people think, the courts are not designed to resolve an election dispute for president, Senate, or the House of Representatives up here in Washington, D.C., and the Constitution, along with accompanying federal statutes, are quite clear. The United States Congress has the final verdict, decree, whatever you want to call it, on every election contest involving the members of the House, members of the United States Senate, and the President of the United States. So even up here on Capitol Hill, a lot of folks weren't familiar with those provisions of federal law, the United States Constitution. So part of my job has been to educate people, saying, whoa, wait a second. The courts are not the place this is supposed to be. Don't be surprised when the courts don't bother to hear these cases. They just dismiss them outright for lack of standing or some other procedural reason without getting to the substance of it. It's not their job. It's our job, the United States Congress. So we've caught people's attention on that. Then the second part of it is, well, has there been sufficient systemic voter fraud and election theft to justify denying states with badly flawed election systems their Electoral College vote submissions? And I don't think there's any question. The overwhelming evidence, and it's compelling nationally, is that because of major systemic flaws with various election systems in various states, in addition to what you're reading about in the news media about particular lawsuits, in addition to all that, it's clear that many of these states have election systems that are untrustworthy, and the election was stolen from American voters who supported a conservative, a Republican, rather than a socialist and a liberal. And so that's the backdrop. And hopefully I've been in a position where I can explain to people how compelling the evidence is, where they get past this mantra by the fake news media and by the socialist Democrats who keep screaming to high heaven that there's no fraud, no fraud, no fraud. Well, that's bunk. If you do your homework, there's only one rational and logical conclusion to reach, that there's been massive voter fraud and election theft to a degree never before seen in the history of the United States of America. And so on January the 6th at 1 p.m., we're going to have a roll call of the states. That roll call of the states will be presided over by Vice President Mike Pence. It will be a joint session of Congress, at which point in time each state submits their purported Electoral College votes. We in Congress have the absolute right to object to and reject those state submittals of Electoral College votes if we believe that they're not worthy of our trust. The requirement, first, is that you have a House member and senator who jointly file that objection. And I'm willing to do the House side. And I should add, there are lots of other congressmen who want to do it on the House side, too. We've got more congressmen who want to object than we have states to object to. So there's some competition over who gets to object to which states.
Okay.
And then we need one senator. And if that happens, that triggers a two-hour debate for each state that is objected to, followed by a House floor vote and a Senate floor vote on whether to accept or reject the electoral returns of that particular state that has been objected to. So I'm providing the House objectors. The question is simple. Will there be a senator who is willing to stand up for our country and the election system that is the bedrock of any republic in order to fight this voter fraud and election theft? Or are you going to do like some of our Surrender Caucus members want us to do, just give up the ghost and say, well, that's the way it goes. They stole it fair and square. We're outgunned. We're not going to fight. I don't believe in surrendering. I believe in fighting for our country.
And the Surrender Caucus thing, yeah, I heard you saying that. So who do you, I mean, do you, are you defining surrender? Those are Republicans, or are you, how the Surrender Caucus is how populous or how, you know, uninhabited?
Well, I'm not talking about Socialist Democrats because they are the ones who have actively engaged in voter fraud and election theft. Directly or indirectly, they're all actively engaged in it, okay? So, certainly, the Surrender Caucus, then, is limited to Republicans. I will let them, on January the 6th, identify themselves as a patriot who's willing to fight for our country or as a member of the Surrender Caucus, and that identification will be made by whether they stand up for our country, for an honest, accurate, and fair election system, or don't. And if we do have four votes, how do they vote? They'll be identifying themselves. I don't need to do it.
And Congressman, so many questions about what you had said. One of the things here, a nuanced question, that it seems like, and correct me if I'm wrong, what you're saying is there has been some amount of fraud that is tolerated. It has now moved beyond that. Am I picking that up correctly? Like, it's now beyond where it's been before. Okay, before, at a certain level, maybe because it didn't change results or something like that, that was not okay.
But elections that have been stolen in the past.
Okay.
But this is the presidency. This is the White House. This is the big enchilada. There's nothing bigger than this in the United States of America. And so this one happens to have received more attention than others. But election theft is not unusual across the country. What is unusual is that it involves the election of the President of the United States. Now, some might argue differently, like in 1960, Kennedy versus Nixon, and whether that election was stolen in Chicago or some other place around the country. There might be some others like that that are pretty far long ago. But this is for the presidency of the United States of America, with all that entails, with the appointment of judges to the judiciary, to the advocacy of policies to the United States Congress, to international affairs, to being commander-in-chief of the United States military forces. So it doesn't come any bigger than this.
What about, I think I heard you say the other day that this is not the first time a move to strike election has happened, right? I mean, this is...
Oh, no. In 1824, the House of Representatives decided who would win the election, and they chose the second-place finisher, John Quincy Adams, over Andrew Jackson. In 1876, you had Rutherford B. Hayes, the Republican. He had 185 Electoral College votes. The Democrat had 184, and there were challenges successful challenges to the submissions by three states, Louisiana, Florida, and South Carolina. Now, those three states voted Republican, according to the Republicans who were in control of those states at the time, but it's quite clear that no Republican would have won any kind of election in those three states, in as much as we were still occupied in the South by Northern forces. It was still during Reconstruction. It was on the heels of hundreds of thousands of Southerners being killed in the War of Northern Invasion, as a lot of Southerners viewed it back then, and a totally destroyed economy. And so there was great animosity in the South against Republicans, an animosity that lasted over a century, 100 years, where no Southern state was anything but Democrat, okay? And yet there was this submission, Florida, South Carolina, and Louisiana, for Rutherford B. Hayes. And so Congress accepted that contest. They deliberated it. They created a committee that was supposed to have been split 50-50 Democrat and Republican with one tiebreaker. They came back and they reported on whether there was election fraud and theft and what have you. And it wasn't looking good for Rutherford B. Hayes. Those states probably were going to be in limbo, or they were going to be given to the Democrat who was only one vote behind in the Electoral College. Then a deal was cut, and the deal was this: Rutherford B. Hayes, these three states will remain in the Republican column, even though we know that that is a bogus submittal of Electoral College votes. If you will remove Northern occupation forces in the South and end the Reconstruction era, Rutherford B. Hayes cut that deal. He was elected President of the United States, and he was honorable, so he kept his promise, and he withdrew the Northern forces, and Reconstruction ended, and the Southern states at that point forward were treated pretty much like any other state in the Union.
Just joining us, talking to Congressman Bo Brooks, who on January 6th will move to project what the Electoral College, or he's going to make people ask the question state by state on these votes. Now, you talked about the other component here in a joint session. That is the Senate. All right, so you are on record. You are the person doing this for the House. Nobody yet for the Senate. You got to have had conversations, Congressman. I mean, what are people saying in the Senate? Do you have people that are just waiting for their name to be spoken? Where does that stand?
Well, I have had conversations with senators that have requested that I meet or talk with them. I have not initiated any contact with any member of the United States Senate, of substance at least, about this subject matter. I recognize that the key for what a U.S. senator is going to do is not Mo Brooks or any other congressman. The key is the voters who elected them. And senators will respond to voters who say, we need you to stand up and fight for our country. And if enough voters do that, well, then those senators will react accordingly. And you know, as a little aside to all this, you know, Donald Trump won Alabama in 2016 by a large, large margin, okay? Did you know that the Democrats objected to Alabama's submittal of its Electoral College votes on January the 6th of 2017?
So in history, that's why I was asking the history of this. You took us back and kind of gave us the deep history, but as recently as 3 years ago?
Yeah, well, it'd be almost
Four years ago.
Now, the House Democrats who objected to our submittal, even though Donald Trump won by probably close to 20 percentage points in Alabama, they wanted to strike Alabama's Electoral College votes from the number attributable to Donald Trump. They also want to do the same thing with Georgia and about a half dozen other states. Now, they did not have a Senate co-sponsor, so there was not a floor debate in the House and the Senate, nor was there a vote in the House and the Senate. In 2005, Senator Barbara Boxer joined with a Democrat to object to the Electoral College vote submittal of Ohio, which was a pivotal state. And Ohio certified to the United States Congress that Donald Trump won by 120,000 votes. But that didn't stop the socialists, the Democrats, from filing their objections and forcing that two-hour debate in the House and the Senate, followed by a vote of the Senate and the House of Representatives. So this is not at all new. I guess what's new is that it usually works in favor of Democrats. And so the news media portrays it that way, where it's either justified if they're successful, or if it's not successful, they just don't pay any attention to it, so the general public doesn't even know it happened.
What happens here if, and kind of guide me through this, kind of new to me, if the, let's say, you find that senator, the senator names themselves, and the Senate votes to reject the Electoral College votes, but the majority of the House doesn't. You kind of get a bicameral split there. What does that mean? Anything?
If the House does not reject the submittal and the Senate does reject the submittal of Electoral College votes by suspect state, then by law, that submittal by the contested state is accepted and those votes count towards whomever that state asserted they voted for. The real question in the House is, how do you count the votes?
Mm-hmm.
Under the 12th Amendment to the Constitution, which is when the House elects a president of the United States, you don't vote by individual congressmen. It's not a majority out of 435 congressmen.
That's right.
It's a majority out of 50 states.
Yeah, okay.
And so the argument's going to be, well, how do we count our votes in the House? Is it a majority of the state delegations, which it seems like it ought to be, because this is also part of the process for electing the President of the United States, and the 12th Amendment says that if we're voting to elect him, it's a majority of the state delegations, or do we do it based on a majority of the members of the House? If it's the latter, the Democrats win. If it's the former and the Republicans stick together, the Republicans win.
Getting a lot of questions here for you, Congressman. One said, with a court record of 50-some-odd losses on claims of voter fraud, how does this have credibility?
Well, it's because none of those cases have any merit. Not a single one of them involved discovery, examination of witnesses, examination of documents, depositions, and a trial in front of a federal court judge or any other kind of judge. There have been zero trials. There have not been anything other than dismissals based on lack of standing or some other procedural conjured-up reason because the courts don't want to get involved. And you may ask, well, why don't they want to get involved?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they don't want to get involved because they understand, as I understand, that this is the duty of the United States Congress and the United States Constitution and federal law. We are the final arbiter, the final jury verdict, the final judge order. That's our job. It's not the Supreme Court's or federal judges. So it shouldn't surprise anyone that they say, sorry, this is not what our judicial system is designed to handle. And besides that, under the law, this is a verdict that must be cast by the United States Congress. So it should surprise nobody that the judges are rejecting these lawsuits and that none of these lawsuits have been decided on the merits. So we don't know from the lawsuits whether there's fraud or not fraud, whether there's election theft or not theft, because there haven't been any trials where the evidence has been presented.
Congressman, on the Senate question here, and you talked about the voters of states and people would be held to account on that day. Let's talk about right here at home. You, Alabama congressman, know you have support from other Alabama congressmen. In the Senate, I haven't heard anything from Senator Shelby to the positive of moving forward with this. What about Senator-elect Tuberville? Will he be acting senator at the point of January 6th? How does that go?
Tommy Tuberville gets sworn on January 3rd, and one of the first votes he will face will be on January the 6th. He'll have to make a decision on whether he wants to join in objecting to these Electoral College vote submissions by states that have badly flawed election systems that aren't worthy of our trust. And if somebody else joins in that objection rather than Tommy Tuberville, then Tommy Tuberville will have a vote on the Senate floor about whether to accept or reject these Electoral College vote submissions. Now, I don't think there's any question but that Donald Trump carried Georgia, if only lawful votes cast by eligible American citizens were counted. Same thing in Pennsylvania, same thing in Nevada, same thing in Arizona, Wisconsin, Michigan. I need more data to form an opinion concerning those two. I've heard some not good things coming out of those two states. But I am absolutely convinced that Donald Trump won a majority of the votes lawfully cast by American citizens in Nevada, Arizona, Georgia, and Pennsylvania, in which case Donald Trump should be getting ready to get sworn in for a second term of office.
It seems like, just from the outside looking in, Congressman, that's a wing and a prayer at this point.
Well, there's a 0% chance if we surrender. There is always a chance if we fight. And the key element is the American people. If they demand that their senators and congressmen fight for honest and accurate elections and do so by rejecting the Electoral College votes of these states that have run shoddy systems that are ripe with fraud, opening the door for election theft, then those senators and congressmen are going to react to that kind of plea from American citizens. So the key is not the senators. The key is not the House members, although they're definitely important and have a major role. The key is whether the American people will stand up and fight for their republic and the election system that undermines that republic, the election system that is the basis for that republic, or are they going to let voter fraud and election theft continue indefinitely and the socialists take control?
If it goes that way, Congressman, and you don't get the votes on January 6th, and it becomes President Joe Biden,
President-elect Joe Biden. Lawfully becomes
President-elect Joe Biden.
President-elect Joe Biden, and you can expect that he'd get sworn in on January the 20th.
Will you, going forward, will he be, if you're asked, will you feel he's an illegitimate president because of what you're talking about?
Absolutely. He would be both illegitimate and he would be the President of the United States on January the 20th if he gets sworn in. It won't be the first office holder we've had that's by hook or by crook, by himself or his team or others, won an election by theft. LBJ did it. Lyndon Baines Johnson did it in his early Senate race in Texas. He stole that election. So this is not that unusual. There's a pretty good argument that Al Franken stole his election up north in Minnesota. So this happens periodically. The question is, this time, are the American people just going to shrug and say there's nothing I can do about it, or are they going to fight for their country?
Well, it sounds like there's a lot of people out there, like I said, outside of AL5, outside the state of Alabama, that see you as a champion for this. We'll see on the Senate side who steps. And technically, because he's just sworn in, can then Senator Tuberville be the person in the Senate to bring this, or does it have to be somebody else?
It can be anyone who was sworn in on January 3rd, okay. January 4th, or January 5th, or even before noon on January the 6th.
There we go. All right, Congressman Brooks, as always, I appreciate our discussions, and we'll talk again soon.
My pleasure. And sometime, if we could, let's get into the details of the evidence that persuades me that the overwhelming case is of election theft and voter fraud.
Let's try to get that book next week.
Love to.
All right, good deal.
Take care.
There he is, AL5's Congressman Mo Brooks. Of course, you see him on television talking about this nationally. He is leading a movement that has a lot of support out there from conservatives, from Republicans out there. How about you? We'll talk about this when we get back.